not letting one day turn into a bad second day, or a bad day turn into a bad week, and a bad week turns into a bad month. And so bounce back factor is really important. So they're all things that actually don't require a lot of skills, Sam. It's like you and I were talking about earlier. A lot of that is, again, the mental framework to be able to actually harness the vision that you want for yourself.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent, for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking, and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey everyone, it's Sam here. Today we're joined by Thomas McGlynn, the newly appointed president of the Real Estate Institute of New South Wales. Thomas also brings a wealth of experience as CEO of Bresic Whitney, one of Sydney's most distinctive real estate brands. And under his leadership, Bresic Whitney is a significant force in Sydney's premium property market, known for its innovative approach to real estate and strong company culture. His appointment as REI New South Wales president comes at a pivotal time for the industry as we navigate changing market conditions and a new year. So welcome back to the show, Thomas McGlynn.
Thanks for having me, Sam. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah. So firstly, congratulations on your appointment as president of the Real Estate Institute of New South Wales. I think they couldn't have chosen a better guy.
Oh, thank you.
What sort of made you want to get involved in the Institute?
I've been involved for quite a while now in a vast array of different things, from auctioneering competitions to being on the board. I think the reason why I originally wanted to get involved is it's sometimes difficult to work out how you give back to the industry. And I know for myself, I've been very lucky to have a lot of people support me over my career, and I wouldn't be where I am today without that support. And it was a great way to help put me in front of a lot more people and be accessible. So that was originally why I got involved with the REINSW. And then with regards to then moving from being on the board of directors to then moving into being the president, I agree with everything you just said at the top there. There's, you know, a lot happening in our industry, both from a government policy perspective, but technology, mental health in our industry. And I think that there's a lot to do, and I can't really have an opinion on all those things without then getting involved and actually trying to actively contribute. So I feel this is a great way for me to do that.
Yeah, amazing. And so I guess, well, you know, America's about to have a new president, and I have zero comment on that. But as soon as they get into office, they're supposed to get up and give that 100-day speech. Like, what are you going to do in the first 100 days? So it seems like a fairly good question to ask you coming into the presidency for REI New South Wales as well. What are your top priorities for your first 100 days or your first year?
Well, the REI has a really good strategic plan. So I think a lot of the day-to-day things that happen in the Institute are already running well. Tim McKibben and his team do a great job being able to execute on that strategic plan. I think for me, the biggest thing was getting out into the marketplace and being a great advocate for the Institute and the industry with all the different stakeholders that we deal with. There are so many different people that contribute into our industry from a government point of view, from an industry point of view, from a media point of view. And I think a lot of the time as well is just making sure that we've got those connections. So that's been the first thing that I've needed to do, is to make sure that I've been able to make those connections. There's three key things that I think that are probably going to be important for me in the first year, and that's industry engagement, creating policy to advise government, but also ensuring that the REI is ahead of the curve when it comes to things like technology and privacy changes that I know you and I have had conversations previously on that are going to be really big next year. There's three key areas that I feel are going to be important, but my role is also to be there and to support and encourage and advocate for the great work that the REI team, management team do.
Yeah, amazing. And so let's talk about some of the issues that are in play not just for New South Wales, but for Australia as well. But housing affordability is a particularly hot issue in New South Wales. Are there any things that you've already thought of that could help, or that where the REI could help address this challenge?
Look, I think everyone's got an opinion on what should happen. I don't think there's any shortage of opinions, and I don't have an answer with regards to what should happen, but my philosophy always has, and I know that we've spoken about this previously, is that if you change your thinking, you can often change the result. And a lot of the time, it's the philosophical framework that comes to making decisions that actually helps. And one thing that I certainly know needs to change is many people have a point of view from where they currently stand, and through trying to come up with solutions to maybe not fix, but certainly progress things forward when it comes to the housing crisis, is that we need to form policies that see things from all the stakeholders' side. And it's not until we're able to come together and actually be able to think that way, we're not going to be able to come up with the right policies. And so that has to be from a tenant's point of view, that has to be from a owner's point of view, an investor's point of view, but also from a government point of view, a developer point of view, the building industry. There is a lot of people, and everyone always likes to come at this problem with their own solution that fixes their own problems. But it's not just something that has a one-sided approach. So I think some diplomacy and some good old-fashioned communication, and I think some considerations for how other people feel are needed to come up with the right strategy. So from my point of view, I don't feel that that is something that has been done relatively well. And that's why there is always so much conjecture around policies that are put forward to try and fix the housing crisis. And then when some policies are put forward, they haven't been seen through in terms of new houses being built. The governments just have not been able to live up to the promises that they've made with regards to that. And so then everyone loses trust in the equation. So I do think that some good diplomacy amongst all the relevant groups is probably going to be needed first before we come up with those solutions.
Yeah, I was just picturing then, I can't remember who it was, but Edward de Bono and his six hat theory or something like that. Maybe that's what everyone needs, is to put some sort of a hat on with a perspective. Yeah.
Potentially. I heard a great quote. I don't know where it came from, and I know this is not relevant to this, but it kind of is to a certain point, which is, I think the quote was, "I hate that man, I should get to know him more."
Yeah.
And a lot of the time people make assumptions on what should happen on things, but you need to get to know the different sides of the debate first to then know how you can come together to put the right things in place.
Yeah. Speaking of debates, a debate has raged for years anyway that I'm aware of, and that's about professional standards in the industry. And I think that, you know, everyone's in wholehearted agreement that professional standards need to be raised. Only I heard an argument on this very podcast with Steve Carroll hosting that we needed to not raise the barriers to entry because it might actually stifle good people coming into the industry, or people that perhaps weren't university educated or didn't have access to the schools and things like that, that it would take to make real estate a profession. Where do you sit on that side of things?
Well, it is difficult to think about trying to balance it, because you're not going to be able to create a professional environment unless there are barriers to entry that require a certain standard for certain things. I do think where the balance comes from is that there are different responsibilities now based upon the way that the industry works, the way that it's regulated, that your roles and responsibilities and the level of risk that you're managing actually does require, I think, a certain level of professionalism, which the only way to be able to get to that, for example, if you're a licensee of an office or if you're a leader of a business, you are going to need to be able to prove that you can manage things in a certain way. However, we do need to have other things that allow new talent to come into the industry. So I do think it's a balance. The whole road towards professionalism, I think, is a complicated road. And I do believe that the real estate institutes across Australia and then the REIA can play a part in that professionalism in terms of CPD, in terms of licensing and the recommendations that we give to government on licensing. These are all things I think that we can play a part on. But Steve Carroll is right. You need to be able to also have a pathway for people that don't have that experience. So that's my thoughts. I mean, I firmly do believe that you're not going to drive professional standards unless you give people a framework that they need to work towards. And then that framework needs to be something that can be held to account.
Yeah. So let's talk about consumers because, again, they're the end product of the real estate transaction. And I see expectations on consumers increasing, particularly with the work that I've been doing with AI lately. There are 300 million people at the moment, I think, using ChatGPT around the world, getting everything from training plans to financial advice to all sorts of stuff. What do you think about where consumers' expectations are going to be in 2025 and how can we adapt as an industry to meet those needs?
Well, I definitely think that the expectation from the consumer has gone through the roof in the last not only two decades, but even the last decade. And you would know this from getting around not only the country, but around all the different areas that you go to, Sam, about what people would be giving you feedback on. And that is the case. The one thing to consider there, though, is that AI doesn't have any volume problems, but we as humans do have volume problems when it comes to then servicing people. And the expectation from clients, it is really high. And I know that. I still call 300 auctions a year and I still interact with a lot of our clients on the ground in our business. And the level of expectation from these clients has gone up. And that's just not real estate. That's any service industry. They just yearn for that high touch energy. Now, that doesn't mean high touch in terms of human to human interaction. It's high touch in regards to just communication in general, be it digital, in person, or whatever it might just be. So that is, I think, going to be one of the big things that technology helps us with into the future.
Definitely. I think, well, that's one of ChatGPT's superpowers actually, is allowing agents to create more personal experience. I mean, you guys do it very well at Bressick Whitney. You know, Will Goss is a bit of a legend with the marketing side of things and that sort of thing. But yeah, I definitely think that the technology is probably a part of getting more personal, not less, if that makes any sense.
Totally agree. And I think that that helps us because it's very difficult to keep things feeling genuine at high volume. I think that is also the challenge with some agents in Australia that are doing high volume numbers, that are doing over 100 sales, compared to some agents that might be doing between 20 and 30 sales, is that the high volume agents get to a point where they lose what got them to that point because they're unable to be genuine and have a personal touch unless they hire a huge team, which comes with a lot of challenges. So outside of technology, a lot of what people expect from us has remained unchanged for the last 10 to 20 years. But the one thing that has certainly ramped up is the expectation on what sort of service you're getting.
Yeah, for sure. So we've talked a little bit about AI and we've talked a little bit about the externals and things like that. Are there any other trends that you think will have big impact on the industry in the next couple of years?
Yes, I do think that regulation is going to continue to be a big part of what real estate businesses have to deal with. I do think that whether or not it's right or wrong, but it does feel like government in each state and federally are continuing to legislate to try and solve challenges. And that's quite difficult for small businesses to continue to keep up with. And I do think that that's something that is going to be a bit of a trend. And I do believe that there's going to need to be solutions that allow some of these smaller businesses, especially regional businesses, to be able to operate in a cost-effective way. And I unfortunately do believe that this legislation that's going to continue to come in across property management, privacy, all these things actually is better for bigger businesses that have more robust operational structures. So that's something to keep an eye on. And then back to what we're talking about AI is going to play a huge part. And I also believe that we're going to continue to see the emergence of different business models in our industry. And for a very, very long time, so many businesses under the franchise, traditional franchise model, were pretty much the same. Some slight differences, some slightly different branding were run very similar. But now we've got the emergence of super localized businesses. We've got the emergence of other businesses that are not localized. Franchises, non-franchises, businesses like Urban X and so forth. So I think that we're moving into a space where agents are going to have a lot of choice with regards to the style of businesses that they want to engage with. And we as business owners need to be very, very clear on what value we're providing our people. And that's going to be something I think is going to be pretty relevant in the next 2 years.
Yeah, it is interesting, all the different, you know, because I remember when I started in the industry, there was the debate between franchise or non-franchise. And now there's just all these other, you know, are you a white label franchise? Are you a part of a, are you a cooperative? Are you, you know, it's like there's so many different ways of going about it. So Christmas, another debate, actually, this was, oh, first of all, have you been naughty or nice?
I'm always nice, Sam. I'm always nice.
I was going to say, you must have been nice to have gotten elected. But okay, so we're heading into Christmas as we record this anyway. There was a bit of a debate, a lead agent this week, on one camp saying, let's work through Christmas, and another camp saying, shut down and take a break. Where do you sit on that spectrum?
Yeah, I saw that. My good friend Andy McCann down at Jealous Cray, I saw his comments on that. I think it's really, there's pluses and minuses to both. And I can see the benefit of launching properties on Boxing Day. And that is something that I know a lot of people are now wanting to run because they want to get the first buyers that are into the market. But I also know that it's a long year. It's not a sprint. It is a marathon. And I do know that some of the agents that work over that Christmas period do fatigue early in the year. So I really think that it's not a one size fits all, because you also got to consider that some people just not in a position. Some people value family time. And what price do you put upon that? And it's not just agents, it's owners also value family time. Owners do not want to make their properties available for inspection at times over the Christmas New Year period, unless they're going on holiday. Now, that might be a completely different story and the property is vacant. But I also see the point with regards to you getting a kickstart into the market. If you start 2025 well, the chances of you then performing quite well into the Easter slowdown are quite high. But then if you're not taking a break at Easter and you're applying the same philosophy of working over Christmas, New Year, and then cross an Easter period, you're most likely going to crash and burn leading into winter, which therefore means that you're going to have a sluggish start to spring and therefore finish the year quite slowly. So the one thing that I always say to our team is that holidays and time off is really important. It doesn't matter when you take that time off, as long as you've got it structured and you've got a plan in place for what you're doing leading into it and what you're setting up for when you come back.
Yeah, good advice, actually. That I remember talking to Katie Strickland years ago, and she sort of said she never goes anything longer than 12 weeks without a break, like sort of treats it as a 12 weeks and then a cool down and then another 12 weeks and then a cool down, like an athlete, I guess. But she is an athlete, right? So
yeah, exactly. And again, I always come from the point of view that a lot of the reason which what separates someone from being where they are now or achieving the things that they want to achieve is generally how they're feeling in here. Because you can quite easily go out and get the advice about the technical things you should implement. Like you could listen to all of your podcasts, read the Elite Agent stories, and go to things like ARIC and so forth and pick up the technical things as long as you're taking notice. But it's generally what's happening up here that allows you to continue to turn up day in, day out. And not recharging can play a big part in that. It's like eventually your phone's going to run out of juice. You know,
yeah.
You need to recharge it. So if you're working across Christmas, then you're going to need to try and recharge it some other time throughout the year.
Yeah, you need to plug that battery in before it goes completely dead. That's an analogy I use quite often, actually. I like that one. I sort of feel like low battery, need to plug back in.
Yeah.
So we've had a bit of an interesting year in real estate. It's been a bit of a Forrest Gump box of chocolates. There's been ups and downs and all that sort of thing. But let's talk about winning listings in the current market. Actually, I don't know if we should be talking about winning listings or we should be talking about selling them, because obviously you need the sale without the, I think Mark McLeod says three sales or something or other, one to list it, one to the vendors, and then one to sell it. So what are some things that are working now that might not have been as effective sort of 12 months ago when we were in a bit of a boom time?
Yeah, well, I really enjoy these markets because I tend to think that it becomes easier for you to be able to show your points of differences when the market is challenging. And those that generally have a strategy and stick to the strategy and have a point of difference often rise to the top. I think that it's become more important than ever to ensure that the way that you're presenting property and marketing property is very, very important. And the reason why that's important is because simple science is that the more people that you can have engaging online or engaging in person that open for inspections on a property, the greater the chance you are of then converting people from liking the property, looking at the property, to making an offer on the property and therefore buying it. And we know that your ability to create competition is what drives people to do things. And I think that those in the current market that have the ability to create competition are actually selling properties. Because although it's quite challenging and clearance rates have been dropping in many parts of the country, there still is quite a high level of property transactions occurring. And so what does that look like? Well, it means that I think presenting properties, styling is really important. Attempting to convince people to make slight changes to their properties, decluttering houses, painting things, recarpeting certain areas, the way that your properties are photographed, the way that your properties are videoed, what is your social campaign, what is your strategy around making it a really eventful open for inspection. All these things which, when we say them out loud, don't really feel like strategies, we tend to forget, because when it's a great market, realistically, it's the market that gets the results. And when the market becomes challenging, it is generally the agent that is the difference between something selling and not. And I often say that the only reason why a property won't sell at the moment, outside of the seller's expectations completely changing and them deciding not to sell, if you've got a willing seller, the only reason why a property won't sell at the moment is operator error. That means the agent didn't do something in the 5 to 6 weeks that they had a campaign. They didn't do something in that time to progress the property towards sale. They waited 3 weeks to tell the owner the truth about price, rather than telling the owner the truth about price after the first 10 people that inspected the property and gave them price feedback. It could be that they're too proud to go back to the owner and say, look, I don't think we've been able to present the property in the best way. I think we need to re-photograph the property. It could be that they didn't call a buyer back in time and they went and bought something else. It could be that they had a really, really interested buyer on a property, and then another buyer also called saying we're interested, and they did two separate private inspections where they could have done the private inspections at the same time and showed both buyers that there is other people that want to buy it. Just simple things like that that I think that a lot of people don't really think about is what's getting deals across the line. In terms of listing at the moment, Sam, I think that you really need to be compelling. If you're going into a listing presentation and not sounding compelling and just sounding like everyone else, it then comes down to likability, fee, and marketing. And as soon as you go into that, realistically, it's a race to the bottom. And so we really encourage our team to go to an owner and demonstrate to them, this is how we are going to get you more money. Now, at Bressy Whitney, we have a creative approach that we develop, invest in, and make sure we try and be ahead of the game. And we've started to do more and more things with regards to creating editorial articles around particular properties that we're bringing to market and trying to create a story behind these. We also then work really closely with buyers. We feel there's a difference between market knowledge and product knowledge. And market knowledge is you know all the buyers that are currently buying in that particular market. You know what they've bid on previously And that means that you're able to try and get them to these properties that come on early. And we demonstrate that to our owners. We also have a digital strategy that we feel is different. So these are all things that, again, I really hope that our team go to the listing presentation and a seller says, you know what, that sounds different. No one else has said that to me before. And then you can say to them, well, that means something, doesn't it? So I think that is important. And I do believe for anyone that might be listening, that is a big thing in 2025 that you really need to be able to articulate to your owners why you. Why should they use you over someone else? And then why should they use either your business or the business that you work in over other people? And if you can't explain that within 5 minutes simply, then it means that you probably don't really understand why you enough.
I 100% agree with all of that, actually. As we sold a place last year, which has been well documented, but I think with the marketing schedule, you could have almost put some masking tape across the top and they all would have been exactly the same. Like, take the logo out and there's not too much difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I suppose is telling. Okay, so let's talk training. So you have just talked about a lot of the things that you are training your agents on. What are some of the other things that you're thinking about upskilling your team on in the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, look, a lot of the time that I think, well, a lot of real estate agents do, we're quite reactionary in with regards to buyer inquiry. And the reason why I'm talking about buyers first rather than when dealing with sellers is that, like what you and I have just talked about, in a booming market, you're always going to be okay. But in a market that we're in right now, your ability to drive buyers and get buyers to inspect certain properties is really critical. So we're really encouraging all of our agents to double down on making sure that they are servicing their buyers in their relevant marketplaces and that they know who the active buyers are right now. So if I say to my team, who are the five best buyers in Paddington right now? And I expect them to be able to say, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Mr. Jones, Mrs. Stewart, and they know what they've bid on previously, what their budgets are, what's the ideal property that they would buy if they found it. Now, the reason why I'm saying that's important is that if we're doing that, it means we're not relying on Domain or realestate.com to drive us the traffic. We are getting in front of it early, and then the major portals and any other marketing that we might do sprinkles the magic dust on top for us to create some further competition. So we're not just waiting. The whole adage is, you know, John McGrath used to say, you don't start trying to sell the property the minute it goes live. You start trying to sell the property the minute the ink dries on the agency agreement. I know it sounds pretty old school. However, I think that technology is only going to help us be able to nurture buyers in a better way to keep them there active for when we meet sellers. Because at the end of the day, real estate's not complicated. Find a seller, find a buyer, match them together, provide value, collect a commission. And sometimes we overcomplicate that. And so it's about how do you do that? So we're really upskilling our team on making sure that, because I think it's going to be a challenging market. I know many people are hoping for interest rate drops early in the year. I don't think they're going to happen until the middle of the year. So it's probably going to be a similar market to start the year that we're in right now. And your ability to know the buyers is going to be really important.
Yeah, great tip there. Okay, so let's talk about your top agents at Bresic Whitney, because you are known for some of the big names. If I was a new agent coming into your company, who would you tell me to track or like, sorry, shadow? Shadow is a better word, not track. Track's a journalism thing. Sounds like stalking. So if I was coming in as a newbie, who would I be shadowing and what would they be doing that is something that you would want me to take to the rest of my career?
Well, first, I'd probably ask you, what's the vision for yourself? And then I'd connect you with the people that are currently living out your vision. And for different people, that might be different things. Andrew Liddell, who's, you know, one of our top agents, our number one agent, he's one of the best in the industry that I know that does 100 plus sales, still has a great relationship with his wife and children, is present with them at home, is a great human being, but really values that time with family and still does 100 plus deals. And then there's others that are in our team that might go, you know what, I'm still 10 years away from having a family. I want to crack the whip and I want to go hard and I want to live and breathe real estate 24/7. Well, I'd probably go and get you to shadow one of the young guys that's in our team that works with Michael Kirk. His name's David Smith Cameron. He's a team member in Michael Kirk's team and he'll do a million GCI within someone else's team.
Wow.
He's only 22, but he lives and breathes it, right? I think the big thing that I feel that our agents do really well, and it doesn't matter what style of agent they are, they have a curiosity that is never satisfied and that they have a self-improvement or an improvement mindset no matter what level they're at. And so what I would say for young people coming in is that, and when they shadow them, they'll probably be quite surprised at the questions that they're getting asked back. And they'd be quite surprised at them asking feedback. What was your opinion on what we just did just then? And how do you think that go? And I think they'd be quite surprised with that. I think the other thing though to consider is that they would notice a really strong work ethic. And some people might be working 80 hours a week, but there might be others that are working 40 hours a week. But no matter what time our agents choose to work, they are getting every minute out of every hour and every hour out of the time that they choose to work every day. And I think that's the difference from going from being an amateur to being a professional, like Phil Harris says. And that is one thing I think that they would notice. And probably also because I just came out of a business planning session just now before you and I are speaking, and we discussed the ability to have grit, not letting one day turn into a bad second day, or a bad day turn into a bad week, and a bad week turns into a bad month. And so bounce back factor is really important. So they're all things that actually don't require a lot of skills, Sam. It's like you and I were talking about earlier. A lot of that is, again, the mental framework to be able to actually harness the vision that you want for yourself.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, knowing what you want, because as soon as you threw that question back at me, I thought, oh, what would I want if I was a real estate agent? It's not something I'd ever thought about, but good answer. All right, so one more question. So you're very well known in the industry and obviously very well respected as well. You've managed to do what I think is almost the impossible, like you've built a strong personal brand alongside running a major agency like Bresic Whitney. What advice would you give agents who want to build a personal brand while staying focused on the business's brand as well? Where is the middle ground there, and how have you managed to do it? How have you managed to pull it off?
It has been difficult, and I wouldn't want to shy away from that. However, I felt as part of our business's strategic plan, it was very important for me to create a personal brand to help the people within the business open doors for them. And that's a big part of the reason why I've attempted to create a brand within the community, let alone the agent community, the owner client community, through my commentary through the Australian Financial Review, Sydney Morning Herald, and other things like that. The big thing though, it can be difficult because you've got your values as a business and you've got your strategic plan as a business. And if you're looking to then build out your own personal brand, it's how does that form part of the business's strategic endeavors? However, you also need to then have your own personal values. And there are some things that have, I think, helped shape my personal brand, because there's certain things that I firmly believe that they're my personal brand. And you've really helped me, I think, at times, we were talking about this earlier, you've helped me, I think, put out my personal values, whether it be through podcasts or written articles. However, I knew that that's who I wanted to be. And again, you just helped me put it out there, right? So I think that's really important. And then the next thing is, visually, what do you want that to look like? And I think that becomes a bit easier because you can go out and look at some people that you think, I like the way that these particular people present themselves, and I would like to do something similar or improve upon this or do this and not do this. And I'm talking about your social media, the way that you talk, all those different sort of things. And for me personally, like, again, you and I have talked about this a lot, I don't shy away from it. If you hear me speak, you will kind of then go and hear Matt LaHood and go, hey, he's saying some similar things to a Matt LaHood, like his philosophies are different. Or you might go and see a John McGrath speak, and I studied the way that he communicated and the way that he spoke, and I wanted to emulate that. So those things there, I think you can learn just by being around great people, but personal values need to be your personal values. And for those that are also leading businesses, I do think it's important to separate them. You know, the big thing is with Bressig Whitney is we wanted to evolve our brand to be a brand for all its people rather than a brand about its founders. And that was going to be more valuable to the business, but also more valuable to the people that are within it. But I think it was equally important for me to continue to grow my personal brand to help make that happen. And at the end of the day, I think we're in a great position now where our business will continue to move ahead into the future with different people that might be the custodian for the business. And that's a great thing. But for that journey that we're in now, my personal brand's been able to help that.
Yeah. Well, I think you've done a wonderful job and you're a wonderful role model for other people in the industry, both new and up and coming. So I just want to thank you again for spending some time with us. We always love chatting to you and finding out what you're up to and finding out what you're thinking about and all that sort of thing. I guess I'll end with one question. If there was one thing that you'd like to leave everyone with this time around, whether it's a bit of advice for 2025 or otherwise, your choice, what would it be?
I think it would be don't sweat the small stuff and don't let things that really at the end of the day don't really matter take away from your own personal well-being and that of your families. And I think that in a world right now, you talked about it earlier, where there just seems to be distraction after distraction, things that happen that are quite difficult to comprehend that happen. The comparison trap that occurs in our industry at the moment is only getting tougher and tougher. It is try not to sweat the small stuff, be kind to yourself and worry about the things that really matter and let the things that don't just go in one part of your brain and then out the other part. So that would be what I would say, Sam. And I think that next year will be a challenging year, but it'll only be challenging if you let it be challenging.
Yeah, great advice. Thomas McGlynn, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.